Part 4, Chapter 9, in which Harvey tells 100 tales in 100 nights. Quote, "How does a mountain girl make love?" "Like an angel." Andy Kaufman from the television series Taxi. The next morning, when Elio's wife found the captain asleep in the hay, she scolded her husband for his lack of hospitality. Their guest could use Cynthia's room, Agnese told him, for God only knew when her daughter would return from the United States. It didn't matter what the neighbors might say, for it had been years since Agnese had ceased to care. The room Harvey was settled in was small and sparsely furnished. There was a water basin, a table and chair, a chest of drawers, a chamber pot, and a canopied bed with a straw mattress. He rested there for a week, until the first day of the new year, when he was strong enough to get up and look around. The airplane movie was The Adventures of Captain Zelig, starring Robin Williams, and Harvey was distracted for a moment from his reading. Based on a novel written in 1979, the film caused a stir years later when fans of Woody Allen claimed the idea was stolen from his 1983 picture. The allegation was ludicrous, of course, for the novel had been written 4 years earlier. But Captain Harvey wasn't interested in seeing a cheap imitation, even if it was an original, so he looked away from the movie and continued to read his manuscript. The mountain air was cold on his face as Harvey stepped out the door. A group of birds was circling over the cobblestone alley, and he watched them slice across the sky. Then he turned up the collar of his coat and started to the center of town. He reached the main street in little more than a minute. It was the only street on which vehicles could pass, and it began at one end of town and ran to the other, where it circled a fountain and started back. All the principal alleys met there, the Vicolo del Forno, the Viale Salumeria, the Via della Pasticceria, and the Vicolo della Farmacia. Each street was named after the shop that was found on it, and each shop was marked with the sign of its profession: the gilded pills of the apothecary, the unicorn of the goldsmith, the horse head of the harness maker, and the white and red-striped arm of the surgeon barber. In less than 15 minutes, Harvey made a complete tour of the town and returned to his new home. There was a young girl helping Agnese stoke the fire when he arrived, and he was struck by her dark, soft eyes. She was a peasant who had been abandoned by her unmarried mother before finding a home with the Pascolis. Everyone thought she was dumb because, apart from numbers, she had never learned to speak more than the words yes and no, which she strung together repeatedly and without sense. As soon as she had grown to the unfortunate age to be of interest to the boys in town, they had abused her. She became the pitiable object of their brutal sport as they ganged up on her and had their way, laughing mercilessly at her senseless cries of, "Yes, no, yes, yes, no, yes." When the abuse continued, she stopped speaking altogether, and it was then that Agnese took her in. Though severely criticized by the self-righteous voices in the town, Agnese was determined to show how serious she was, and she declared that anyone caught abusing the girl would have his genitals hung for show at the butcher's. Shortly after she moved in, Agnese noticed the girl had an uncommon fondness for the fire, and she named her Fiammetta. She proved to be a great help around the house. She learned to cook. She brought water from the fountain, she carried wood, she drew baths for the family, and the animals thrived under her care. She was also good with the convalescent captain, with whom she started to spend time after his week in bed. When Harvey grew strong enough, he began to help with the chores. Agnese was glad of his company, for Fiammetta would still not speak, and there was much gossip to be had. She made it a habit to take Harvey with her when she went shopping, and she taught him all her secrets: how to detect watered wine, milk, or oil, how to tell if bread was made with too much yeast, how to tell if stale fish had been reddened with pig's blood, or if old cheese was made to look fresh by soaking it in broth. And she instructed him in the ways of cooking with primitive utensils, preparing simple sauces and soups. While most days were dedicated to caring for the animals, bringing wood and water, and preparing meals, Saturday mornings were reserved for the weekly bath. The tub would be set in the master bedroom on the second floor, and Fiametta would heat pots of water in the hearth and carry them upstairs. It was a day of rejuvenating relaxation, and though Elio and Agnese each bathed alone, it had been necessary during the first weeks for Fiametta to help Harvey, scrubbing his back with the horsehair brush. The evenings, on the other hand, were passed in front of the fire, as the four residents and whatever neighbors happened to stop in would settle down to talk. The fireplace, which was tall enough for a young boy to stand in and wide enough to hold a 4-foot log, opened to the kitchen on one side and the living room on the other. It was the main source of illumination in the house, even during the day, and when the flames were high, the lamps were extinguished to conserve their oil. The best places were reserved for the guests, followed in order of importance by Elio, Agnese, and Harvey, while Fiametta kept to the rear, sitting in the shadows. Early on, the conversation would focus on what work had been done that day and what remained for tomorrow, and then it would turn to the latest report of rumors. Footnote. Stories of wife-beating were not uncommon, and were told with particular relish when the violence backfired and the husband got the worst of it. At some point, Elio would excuse himself to join his friends at the bar. One night, while Agnese was recounting a savory bit of hearsay, Elio decided not to wait for the end, and when he rose to leave, she scolded him. "Always the bar! Aren't we good company?" "Good company," said Elio. "Fiametta says nothing, and you and Harvey go on like old women." "Well," said Agnese, "maybe if you ever said something. Why don't you tell a story? You used to tell such fine ones when Cinzia was young. I'm sure Harvey would enjoy one." As Elio paused to consider which story he might tell, a rush of protagonists, antagonists, climaxes, and anticlimaxes rushed through his head. But before he could choose one, Harvey began for him. "Filomena was 15 years old," said the captain, "when her grandmother told her, 'If you want your child to be a boy, you must sleep on your right side and have your midwife use water in which a murderer has washed his hands.'" Elio was relieved, for he was too tired to make something up, and he liked having stories told him, because then it was real and not just remembering. So he put a log on the fire and sat back down in his place. The story Harvey told, though taken directly from Elio's memory, was not as Elio remembered it, for just as the log began to crackle and whine in the fire, it altered the captain's tale until the listeners could hear the cracking of a whip, or the cries of a forsaken child, or the moans of an impassioned lover. What our hero told, in fact, was the history of the life of the log, of its stored energies released into the arms of the air. The listeners were enthralled. Even the romantic encounters, which surprised them with their attention to detail, were done with such delicacy that Agnese could not be offended, and Fiametta moved into the light. And so the days passed. Harvey became quite popular in the town. Everyone liked his receptive nature and his knowledge of Abruzzese traditions, and he was often invited to drink in the bar, or skate with the children on the pond, or play in the tournaments of two-king chess. Footnote. In medieval times, chess was played with a second king in place of the queen. Elio was the undisputed champion, and he found in the captain his first worthy opponent. Fiametta loved to watch them play, casting furtive glances at the captain as she cooked or sewed. Had she been versed in the tenets of knight-errantry, she might have imagined herself standing upon a spacious platform, facing the courtyard of some castle around which a throng of people had gathered. Wrapped in a mantle that covered her eyes and her bosom, she would display little emotion as Harvey made his appearance, and even less when, accompanied by many trumpets, Elio would sit down at his side of the table. She would imagine that the pieces on the board were clad in suits of stoutly wrought and gleaming armor, and that their horses were like those that come from Friesland, broad-backed and of grayish color, with an arroba of wool hanging from each of their fetlocks. Harvey would parade one of his knights across the board to where Fiametta was standing, and remain there for some little while, gazing at the one who was asking him to take her side. Then there would be a roll of drums, and the air would fill with the sound of trumpets, and the earth would tremble underfoot as the crowd looked anxiously on, some hoping for a fortunate outcome, while others feared the worst. Commending himself with all his heart to his lady, Captain Harvey would await the signal for the charge, and, when the signal came, Fiametta would cry out, "May God guide you, O cream and flower of mental vacuums everywhere! May God give you victory, since you have love on your side!" But, of course, Fiametta was not read in the ways of knight-errantry, and so she did not imagine these things. Nevertheless, she did have a vivid imagination, and, like all Italian women, was well-schooled in the seductive use of her eyes. And with a single glance, she would capture Harvey's attention and say, "O courteous captain, if I were to speak, I would not tell Grecian fables adorned with many lies, nor Trojan battles foul with blood and gore, but sweet stories of love, fed with torturing desires." They would play until evening when the guests arrived, and Elio would get up to stoke the fire while Harvey prepared the night's story. The group would listen, apprehensively at first, wondering if Harvey would improvise or tell a stock tale from one of their memories. If it was early, Harvey would spin the yarn leisurely, amplifying here and interpolating there, always going on in a steady, gentle voice, except when he impersonated a man or woman in the throes of passion, or a demon in a fit of rage. Then he would pause, anticipating with his silence the pleasure certain to come, and as the fire began to wane, the pauses would become shorter and less frequent, and he would bring the story to an end, reuniting lost lovers, or reconciling the hero to his fate, and leaving the group with a feeling at once of fulfillment and loss. Each story was different, taking its theme from the nature of the wood. There were stories of those who reached the happy end they had sought, or those who obtained what they desired, or regained what they had lost, or those for whom love had an unhappy ending, or those who won happiness after grief and misfortune. And there were the stock tales of tricks played by men upon women, or women upon men, or men upon men and women upon women, and each was born of the same fiery source. It was not long before Harvey began to look at everyone he met in terms of the fire. What kind of flame was Elio? Was his wood slow and deep, or superficial and smoldering at the edges? What was Agnese? What was Fiametta? What was he? One night Harvey's tale was cut short, for Elio had fallen ill with fever, and Agnese insisted he turn in early. Though the neighbors who had stopped in were disappointed, Agnese managed to shoo them out, and when they went upstairs, Harvey remained behind. Staring into the fire, he quickly lost himself in the undulating light, until a noise drew his attention to the shadows behind him. It was Fiametta. She was standing in front of the back wall, loosening her bodice and letting her dress fall to the floor. She emerged from its folds like a mermaid emerging from the sea.
"Arrgh!" growled the captain.
I have slept with mermaids in caves by the sea, until human voices wake us, and we drown. Free of her robes, Fiametta crouched to the floor, and, crawling on her hands and knees, made her way toward him. Her hair was long and wild, falling over her shoulders and covering her breasts, and brushing against her hands as they moved across the floor. Harvey could see the curve of her back as it dipped and rose to her hips, and the roundness of her bottom that was illuminated in the glowing light. She did not approach him directly, but went instead to the fire, where she rose to her knees and set another log on the grill. Then she motioned for him to undress and made a bed of his clothes. At first they sat, feeling the heat of the fire on their naked knees and faces. They watched as the finger of a flame curled around one of the ends of the log, then was joined by others, catching at the corners and licking the bark with their glowing tongues. The pockets of air began to pop and whistle, sending small fireworks from the hearth. Then the couple moved back and lay down, and the caressing began. Just as the flames had awakened the wood, so Fiametta's fingers set fire to Harvey's skin. Slowly, starting at the edges, wrapping and unwrapping, she ran her hand the length of his leg, curling at his calf, while his hand began at her waist, climbing to her breasts, then continued to her shoulder and neck, rising and disappearing in her hair. As the loving mirrored the flame, the silent Fiametta, poor and out of place in society, became confident and secure. For this was no play-act of premeditated passion. This was two animals, spontaneous and unreined, two mammals entwined, skin to skin and breath to breath. The loving burned yellow, blue, and white, devouring everything in reach, filling the night with love's sound and smell. In the hearth, the bark fell away, and the glowing heart was exposed. Then the rocking began, wave upon wave upon wave. The undulating glow continued, moving through the wood, until the once sturdy log became pumice light, a shriveled shell in the shadows. Then the purring Fiametta, unable to suppress her feminine nature, broke the silence and spoke. "Yes, three, no, yes," she said. "Yes, no, 11, yes, 2," said Harvey with surprise. "Yes, 2, no, 5?" she asked with excitement. "Yes," he replied. She wasn't dumb after all. She was simply speaking a language that no one understood, a language which Harvey, sharing her personality, spoke as if it were his own. It was really quite simple, she explained. I realized that one word was not enough, for it could not differentiate between one thing and another. So I added a second actor to the stage, and suddenly anything was possible. Logically, I chose the words yes and no. And then it was quite easy to create my language of opposites, and I named everything in those terms. There is yes three, no yes two, which is the animal that men ride, and yes two no, which is the wet thing we get from the fountain, and... As she went on, Harvey realized Fiametta was not only not dumb, but she was the smartest person in the entire town. She told him, in fact, that she had always considered the others to be ignorant because they could not comprehend her language, and she was mystified why they had invented so many unnecessary words when two were enough. As Harvey paused to reflect, a spark leapt from the fire and landed on the floor next to him. "Yes, two, no, five, yes. Yes, two, no. Yes, no, three, yes, 71?" asked Harvey. "No," said Fiametta. "Yes, three, no, two, yes, two. Yes, no, 77, yes, 51, yes, two, no." "No?" he asked with surprise. "Yes, no, 69, she said. "Yes, no, 69? He asked with excitement. "Yes, 69, she cried, and they fell to loving again. Night after night the ritual continued, Fiametta remaining while the others had gone, beginning their secret colloquium of passion, while between climaxes they conversed with numerical perfection, expounding the concept of Aleph Naught and countable infinity, and offering as proof an infinite shuddering within. The gods became excessively fond of the carnal couple, giving Harvey an almost godlike endurance that enabled their sessions to continue until dawn. Even Aphrodite was impressed by their passion, and she let the captain have his pleasure, withholding her arrows of remorse, until one night she decided he had had enough, and she pushed the couple into a kiln of fornication like none they had known before. Agnese, thinking the animals were making an unusual amount of noise, came downstairs to investigate. And when she saw who the animals were, she flew into a rage and threatened to kill them both. Elio rushed down to save them, and spare the universe as well, but he was unable to dissuade Agnese from demanding the captain's removal. And so it was that the next morning Harvey was on a train headed north, closing the book forever on Elio, Agnese, and Fiametta, and on their imaginary town.